One way I can tell I'm getting older is I used to laugh at those Maxine things. Now when I hear them, I go, This is our study of the history of the world, and we're calling it from a biblical perspective for the main reason that in the Bible we have information about world history, especially antiquity, that accepted world history doesn't have. Last week we looked at Genesis chapter 10. Has to be one of the most amazing historical documents of all time. Because Genesis chapter 10 gives us the origin of every civilization in the world. After the flood, Noah and his family landed near the mountains of Ararat in what is now Turkey. And his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and their families spread out from there in the three families, and that's how the world was repopulated after the flood. And you'll remember that the family of Japheth settled in Europe and in India and in Iran. So the family of Japheth includes Europeans, we would call the Caucasians, the Asian Indians, and the Iranians. Then there was the family of Ham. And Ham became the father of diverse groups here. Ham became the father of the Africans and the Orientals. And therefore, that means that Ham is also the father of what we call the American Indians, the Eskimos, all the indigenous groups in North and South America. Shem became the father of the Jews and the Arabs, pretty much confined to the Middle East. If we understand how those families were distributed, we'll understand the prediction that Noah made for the families of his three sons. Every family has gifts unique to that family. Japhethites have certain gifts. Hamites do. Shemites do also. And God gifted those families specifically to bless the entire human race. But all of these families, all three of them, have faults. And these faults have impacted the human race. So let's begin with the family of Shem. Again, the father of the Jews and the Arabs. Noah said in Genesis 9:26, "Blessed be the Lord." Oh, it's the word Lord in all caps, which means Yahweh. "Blessed be Yahweh, the God of Shem." Shem was the family to whom God would entrust the knowledge of Yahweh. The world would know God as Elohim, the Creator, but the family of Shem would know Him as Yahweh. That's His personal name. That is His covenant name. Yahweh is the God of salvation. To the Old Testament Jews, He was the God who would bring the Messiah. He's the God of the cross. So Yahweh is the saving God. And to Shem was entrusted the knowledge of Yahweh. Salvation through Him, through the cross. And the family of Shem was gifted with great spiritual capacity. Think about it. There are three monotheistic religions today. Religions that acknowledge one God. There are three, and there are only three. Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. And all three of them came from Shem. That's Shem's gift, spiritual nature. Shem is highly gifted with spiritual capacity for understanding. However, Shem has faults. The family of Shem tends to take the knowledge they have of Yahweh and become legalistic with it. That's exactly what happened to Judaism. It became legalistic before the time of Jesus. Jesus noticed that the knowledge of Yahweh that Shem had been corrupted by legalism. That's what Jesus battled. To this day, Judaism is extremely legalistic. And what about Islam, the other religion that came from Shem? You talk about legalistic. What happened is that Islam put Yahweh out of the tent and put Allah in the tent. Shem is listed first of the three families because his gift is the most important, isn't it? It's the knowledge of Yahweh, the knowledge of how to be saved through his son Jesus. To Shem was guarded the knowledge of how to be saved to get out of this world alive. That's why Shem's listed first. Now we come to the family of Japheth. Japheth also. The family of Japheth has gifts, and the family of Japheth has faults. 9:27, Noah predicted, "May God enlarge Japheth." As we saw last week in Genesis chapter 10, that's exactly what happened. Japheth was stretched out from Europe all the way to India and then to Iran. But the word enlarge refers to a gradual increase. So it may Japheth be gradually increased upon the earth. And history shows us that's exactly what happened. Think about the first empires in human history. Babylon and Egypt. Now, interestingly, those were both from Ham. And they were very powerful. But they were localized. Egypt never really spread its territory. And neither did Babylon. It was conquered by Persia before it could. They were localized. The first empires to be really enlarged upon the earth were from Japheth. The first really what we would call world empire was Persia. Iran. That's Japheth, remember? And then the second great world empire was Greece. Alexander the Great. Another Japhethite. The third great world empire was from Japheth, and that was the Roman Empire. The most powerful of all time, maybe. The Roman Empire was so powerful that it still has not really gone away. It lives on in the nations of Western Europe, and I believe it will be revived. That's a government established by Japheth. May Japheth be enlarged upon the earth. And God gifted Japheth with the ability to enlarge himself upon the earth because he gave people the gift of exploration. All the great explorers were from Japheth. The Vikings, for example, Eric the Red, Leif Erikson, discovered Greenland, maybe even North America. They were Japheth. Christopher Columbus, the Spanish, Holland, France, Portugal even was a mighty world power because they were from Japheth. They were enlarging. And England, of course, sailed across the whole world. That's Japheth. Be enlarged upon the earth. The British Empire, and the British Empire, of course, being Japheth, a Japheth government, that was the first empire, literally, to have stations around the whole world. The sun never sets on the British Empire. That's Japheth being enlarged. And, of course, the United States. Now, we're a melting pot culturally of all three families. However, our culture is predominantly Japheth. And what has been the most powerful government of all time in the history of the world? The United States, which came from Japheth. God gifted Japheth. And God gifted Japheth intellectually. All the great philosophers came from Japheth. In fact, it's in Greece that the word philosopher, philosophy, first appears. The Greek culture laid the foundation for what we would call the intellect. Who were the first great philosophers? Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. They were all from Japheth. That was the culture. And what about the Greek language? The Greek language was so powerful that God himself chose the Greek language as a vehicle for the New Testament. So, obviously, God gifted Japheth with the intellect, with the ability to establish governments, and to establish philosophy. And God intended those gifts to be used for the entire human race. And to a large degree, that has worked. Can I give you some examples? But we have to point out, Japheth has faults. And Japheth, although he tends to have the gifts of the intellect and philosophy, in Japheth, there's a tendency for that intellectual ability to turn into pride. And Japheth tends to focus on himself. Think about all the humanistic philosophies, theologies in the world. All of them came from Japheth. For example, modernism. What is modernism? Well, let's start earlier. Let's start with traditionalism. The long-held view back through the millennium that there was a higher being, and this higher being tells us what's right or wrong. That's traditionalism. Modernism began surfacing in the 1900s. And modernism is the view that we don't need this higher being to tell us what's right or wrong. We can figure it out for ourselves. You know where that came from? That came from Europe. That came from Japheth. Now it's prevalent in America. Actually, what's even more prevalent today is postmodernism, which took it one step further. Postmodernism says, not only do we not need this higher being to tell us what's right or wrong, Postmodernism says there is no absolute right or wrong. And where did that come from? That came from Japheth. Japheth has great gifts, but he has faults. Japheth is successful to the degree that, 927, let Japheth dwell in the tents of Shem. When Japheth dwells in the tents of Shem, he's successful. What are the tents of Shem? Remember, Shem is the God who knows Yahweh. To the family of Shem was entrusted the knowledge of how to be saved. If you live in those tents, what that means is you're conducting your life with that knowledge. Japheth is successful as he enlarges himself upon the earth to the degree that he stays in the tents of Shem, that he stays in there with the gospel. When Japheth does that, he's successful. And see, that's what God intended. God did not intend for Japheth to conquer the world to make a name for himself. God intended Japheth to use his intellect, to use his gifts of exploration, to use his gifts of establishing government, in order to promote a culture and a government where the gospel is proclaimed. That's why God wanted Japheth enlarged upon the earth. God wanted Japheth enlarged upon the earth to set up governments around the world based on biblical principles. Equity, justice in both directions. The guilty are punished. The ones who are not guilty are left alone. That's what God wanted Japheth to do with government. Where people are free, where they're protected. That's how Japheth was to be enlarged upon the earth. And in many cases, that has been the case. Many cases, Japheth has set up governments in the tents of Shem, the knowledge of God through Jesus Christ, where people have freedom and democracy. The one we're in right now is a perfect example. Where Japheth came here and set up the government and set up the culture in the tent of Shem with the knowledge of God. When Japheth does that, he's at his best. Again, to a large degree, it worked. Think about it. The Roman Empire, as it was enlarged, that became a vehicle for the expansion of the gospel. That's exactly how it's supposed to work. Japheth enlarged himself across Europe, and the gospel just followed the tents of Shem. Christopher Columbus, a Japhethite, an explorer, he came to the New World with the tents of Shem. You read his diaries, he was a believer, and he said, my intention is to bring the gospel to the New World, and he knew the gospel. The British Empire, as they enlarged upon the earth, they enlarged in the tents of Shem. The East India Tea Company, of all things, a commercial enterprise, said that their goal was to establish commerce with the Indies and also to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ to the East Indies. That was Japheth at his best, enlarging himself in the tents of Shem. And what about the United States? Japhethite, basically. Remember, we're a melting pot, but culturally we have to say we're Japhethite in culture from Europe. There's never been a country that has sent out more the message of the gospel of Shem, the God of Yahweh, the knowledge of Jesus Christ, than the United States. There's never been one. But when Japheth steps outside the tents of Shem, or the tents of Shem, the knowledge of God through Jesus Christ, from our perspective, whenever Japheth steps outside those tents, he becomes selfish and he sets up a religion of humanism. See, that's Japheth's strengths and his faults. Let's go to Ham. Ham is the father of the Africans and the Orientals. Now, Noah's prediction about Ham is repeated. It's stated twice. And unfortunately, there's a very bad textual error. It says Canaan. Let Canaan, it actually is the word Ham. But it's repeated. So what Noah says is, for the family of Shem and for the family of Japheth, it says, let Ham be his servant. Says that in English. That's a terrible word. It sounds very demeaning. That's been the basis of a lot of racism. People thinking that Ham, family of Ham, is supposed to serve everybody by being slaves. Where that misconception came from. Actually, a friend of mine suggested a word, and as we continue the next few weeks to look at Shem, Ham, and Japheth, it's a perfect word. It's the word designer. Ham was to offer personal design services for the family of Shem and for the family of Japheth. So, Shem is gifted spiritually. Japheth is gifted intellectually. And Ham is gifted in design technology. God obviously intended that Ham use his gifts of technology to design a way of life specifically suited for Japheth, wherever he was, and for Shem, wherever he was. What we see in history is Hamites have an amazing ability to carve out, to design a way of life, any geographical area. Wherever they are, Ham can design a way of life, even in hostile environments. You put Ham in the desert, he'll survive. A classic example of Ham and his design gifts are the pyramids from antiquity. To this day, nobody knows how they built those. Of course not. All you have there is sand. And you know what else you have there? Just more sand. So if you're making a list of construction materials available to build a pyramid, your top 10 list would be sand all the way down. They built the pyramids. They're all the seven wonders of the ancient world. They're the only ones still standing. They're built by Ham. Ham does that. Ham can survive anywhere. Put Ham in a frozen tundra of the Arctic, he can survive. Put him out in the world of nothing but ice, he'll survive. You know what he builds his house out of? Ice. Only a Hamite can build a house out of ice that's 60 degrees inside there. Ham can do that. He's gifted. He's a genius at design technology. I don't know how this happened. I'm descended from Ham on my mother's side. I got none of this. You put me in a desert with sand, I'm going to die. Put me in the Arctic, I'll freeze to death. I won't last a day. Our doorknob came off of our house. It came off in Connie's hand. It's okay. I'm a descendant of Ham. I fixed it. My fix was we take the doorknob with us everywhere we go. You got the knob? Actually, my design genius came up with a better, actually Connie did, leave it on the front porch. I don't know how I missed out on that through Ham, but I didn't get it. But Ham is a design genius. Let me tell you some of the things that Ham has invented, has designed. The block and tackle, domes and arches, suspension bridges, paved road. Every time you drive on a paved road, you ought to think Ham. Pistons. Every time you start that car, the pistons, that Ham invented those. Pulleys. Clocks. Every time you look at the clock, well, that may not be a blessing. Every time you look in the mirror, well, that may not be a blessing, depending on who you are. I'll let you decide, you know who you are. Ham invented glass, pottery, china, porcelain, steel, cement, saws, drills, hammers, all from Ham. How about running water? We take that for granted. Turn that tap, there water comes out. Thank Ham. Silk, cloth, linen, cotton, inks. How about printing? You know, long, long before Gutenberg started printing in Europe, the Chinese were already printing on paper, movable type. Tomatoes, potatoes, beans, pineapples, coffees. Geometry. Long before Pythagoras had the Pythagorean theorem, a colleague of mine brought me a little clay tablet he got in Iraq in the 1970s. It's a squeeze. It's made from a mold of an ancient Hamitic tablet from Babylon. There's the Pythagorean theorem written right on there. Long before Pythagoras. Geometry, long before Euclid. Logarithms, trigonometry, anesthetics. You ever had to go under? You ever had to get anesthetic? Thank Ham. Basically, everything we take for granted in our way of life has been designed by Ham.
Then why is Africa so underdeveloped?
I'm going to get to that next week. That's where I'm going. These things work best when all three of the families are doing what's right. Japheth has dropped the ball, Shem has dropped the ball, and so has Ham. But we've got to account for the fact that most of Africa is in darkness, under terrible governments. They've never developed, and there's a reason for that. You see, Ham can take whatever's there. If it's sand, if it's dirt, he can take whatever's there. If it's ice, and he can design a life support system. He's a technological genius. So it's pretty clear that here was God's intention for repopulating the world. They're based there in Turkey. I believe it was God's intention that Ham would go out first. Ham would leave the home first. And Ham would design an initial life support system because he can do that based on his technological gifts. Now, once he has designed that initial life support, immediately Japheth was to follow. And Japheth was to set up government. But Japheth was to set up government accompanied by Shem, who would continue to bring the revelation of Jesus Christ, the Messiah, through God. Then it would continue on. Their relationship would continue. Ham would continue to design, elevate the technology. Japheth would continue to grow the government, philosophy. And Shem would continue to provide the spiritual component. I believe that's how God intended the human race to be after the flood. Now, to a degree, the scenario I just said happened to a large degree. In fact, everywhere in the world, think of any area in the world, wherever area you think of, the first people there were Hamites, without fail. Captain Cook started traveling through Oceania in the 1800s. He came to Australia. Guess who he found? Ham. Hamites, the Aborigines. He went to Hawaii. Guess who he found? Ham. Marco Polo traveled to China about 1100-1200. Guess who he found already there? Ham. Christopher Columbus came to the New World, came to the Caribbean. Who did he find already there? Ham. What about the Pilgrims? They landed here on the coast, East Coast. Who was already there waiting for them? Ham. Anywhere in the world you want to think of, Ham was already there. Because remember, you send Japheth out to the Arctic, he'll die. So God's intention was Ham goes first. He designs the life support. Immediately Japheth comes. Now, next week I'm going to explain specifically why it is that Ham was there first. Or everywhere first. He was there. But these relationships between Japheth and Ham over the years, I believe, give us glimpses of what God had in mind as an ideal. Again, think about the Pilgrims. They're Japhethites. They come to America from England. They would have starved to death. But God had somebody there waiting for them. God had Ham there, the designer. When they arrived, Ham was there. Would they have possibly survived without Squanto? And he spoke English. So God already had Ham ready there, teaching him how to grow things by putting fish in a hole. Only Ham would come up with that. With the seed, of course, yes. Otherwise, I'd try to grow a fish. I'll plant this fish and maybe a fish plant or a doorknob will grow. God had Ham ready there. And Squanto, you think God didn't have a sense of humor? He said, I got you covered. I got a Hamite here who speaks English. And Massasoit, they're having Thanksgiving dinner. They invite Massasoit, typical Japhethites. They're having Thanksgiving dinner, a few cans of Beanie Weenies and some Sloppy Joes. Massasoit shows up, he says, you got to be kidding me. You call this Thanksgiving? He comes back with 5 deer. God put Ham there to pave the way for Japheth. What about Lewis and Clark? Thomas Jefferson sent Lewis and Clark to explore the great Northwest, the Louisiana Purchase that he had just made. You think they would have survived without Sacagawea, the Hamite? There's no way. There's the pattern. And I think the pattern that God envisioned, I know I'm prejudiced, I think we don't see it anywhere better than in the United States. The early settlers came there, but Ham was first. He designed a way of life so that when Japheth arrives, he survives. Then, what does Japheth do? He sets up the first government. Think about that. Ham had been there so many years and never established governments. That's not Ham's thing. Japheth came, established a government, but the government Japheth established was in the tents of Shem. The Mayflower Compact, written before they even get off the boat, they said, having undertaken for the glory of God and the advancement of the Christian faith there's Japheth living in the tents of Shem, doing exactly what he's supposed to do. Ham comes first, designs the life support. Japheth follows, sets up the government in the tents of Shem. Japheth, also being intellectual, establishes the first university in the New World, Havid, there at Havid Square. And even that university was in the tents of Shem because it was a Christian university. That's the way God designed it. In fact, throughout human history, Ham continues to provide design services for Japheth. Two ways. One, Ham was here initially through the Indians. And then a second wave of Hamites came here in a very terrible way, through slavery. And God certainly did not condone the way that happened. However, God's sovereign. And God brought those African Americans here on purpose. You know why? We need those Hamites. Today, many black Americans are saying that there needs to be more taught about the role of black Americans in history. They think they've been undermined. I don't blame them. I think they're exactly right. We've missed out by not knowing what God has done through Ham in his design genius. Let me give you just one example. George Washington Carver, African American, and he's a classic example of Ham's genius in design technology. George Washington Carver designed 300 products or applications from a peanut. Give me a peanut, say, Johnny, what can you make of this? I'd say, well, I can make a crushed peanut. I'll never know how this Hamite, George Washington Carver, looked at that peanut and thought, I think I can make paint from that. You got to be kidding me. And ink and paving. Whenever you ride those asphalt roads, he was the first one to do it from a peanut. Thomas Edison was one of the few Japhethites who had this design genius. He was a close friend of George Washington Carver. He offered George a $100,000 a year salary. Think about that, in the 1920s, to come work with him. And he said, together we can remake the world. Oh, he was right. Edison was right. The intellectual, governmental gifts of Japheth, combined with that design technology of Ham, it could have been scary what they could have done together. We have glimpses there of how God intended to work. But have you noticed? Most of these examples involve Japheth and Ham, and not Shem. And there's a reason. See, it's very unfortunate. It's tragic what happened. But the sentence, let Japheth dwell in the tents of Shem, took on a dark meaning. Now, originally, when Noah, through God, said, let Japheth dwell in the tents of Shem, what he meant was, let Japheth exercise his gifts of enlarging, his gifts of the intellect, his gifts of the government, alongside Shem. Shem's there with him. Shem's the spiritual component, keeping him anchored to that cross. That's how God meant that. Let Japheth be enlarged upon the earth and let him dwell in the tents of Shem, who lives right next door to him. Shem lives next door with the gospel. Japheth, God says, you just hang there in Shem's tent, keep you anchored in the gospel. But two things happened. Shem didn't go out with anybody. Shem stayed right there in the Middle East, where he is right now. Well, they're in Miami. Shem stayed right there. But there's a spiritual reason. And here's where it gets dark. Remember he said, blessed be Yahweh, the God of Shem, and let Japheth dwell in his tent. It's very tragic, but Shem moved out of the tent. When Shem rejected Jesus Christ, the nation of Israel rejected Jesus Christ at the triumphal entry, were culpable in the events at the cross, continued to reject him, the church became Gentile. So what happened was, Japheth, instead of living in the tents of Shem, he became the owner of the tents of Shem. Shem moved out of the tent, and Japheth moved in. So now, Japheth primarily has been the vehicle for the propagation of the gospel. But hold that thought. I'll get back to that in a minute, because God's will is not going to be thwarted. But I want to pause here for a minute and point out something. God intended, clearly, the three families to work together. Ham goes first. Japheth immediately follows and takes advantage of the life support system Ham has designed. but he comes along with Shem. It's also very obvious that they went their separate ways. But you see, God never forgot any of the three families. Throughout human history, God's always watching all three. Let's go back to Abraham. Abraham had children through three women. His first wife was Sarah. She was a Jew. She was a daughter of Shem. Abraham also had a child, Ishmael, through Hagar. Where did Hagar come from? Egypt. She was a Hamite. His third wife was Keturah. She was from Turkey. She was a descendant of Japheth. So the descendants of Abraham include all three families. Think about the life of Jesus. During the life of Jesus, God always was watching Shem, Ham, and Japheth. At the birth of Jesus, who were the first witnesses to that birth? Luke 2:8. In the same region, there were shepherds staying out in the fields and keeping watch over their flock by night. Those shepherds were Jews. They were from Shem. During his infancy, Jesus had visitors. Matthew 2:1. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, Magi from the east arrived in Jerusalem saying, "Where is he who has been born the king of the Jews?" The east. Where is the east? It was Babylon. The Magi were the core group of the people who had been trained by Daniel centuries before in Babylon. Babylon was a Hamitic culture. So the Magi were from Ham. So at his birth, we had Shem. At his infancy, we have a visitation from Ham. And then during his ministry, let's go to John 12, verse 20. Now there were some Greeks. Who were Greeks? They're Japhethites. Among those who were going up to worship at the feast. These then came to Philip. Philip the apostle. He had a Greek-sounding name. They thought maybe he was Greek. Who was from Bethsaida of Galilee, also a very Greek-oriented culture. And they began to ask him, saying, "Sir, we wish to see Jesus." See the pattern during the life of Jesus? At his birth there was Shem, then visited by Ham, and then visited by Japheth. What about the events at the cross? The events at the cross, all three families are there. Matthew 27:25. And all the people said, "His blood shall be on us and our children." Those are the Jews. What a terrible self-fulfilling prophecy they just made, wasn't it? Those are the Jews. After his trial with the priests, he sent to the governor, Pilate, from Rome. Matthew 27:26. After having Jesus scourged, he, that's Pontius Pilate, handed him over to be crucified. There's Japheth, the Europeans. As he's walking with the cross, Luke 23:26. When they led him away, they seized a man, Simon of Cyrene. Cyrene is a country in northern Africa. Coming in from the country, what country? The country of Cyrene. And placed on him the cross to carry behind Jesus. So it's the Jews who say, "Send him to the cross." That's Shem. It's Japheth, the Roman government, who puts him on the cross legally. And who carries the cross? A Hamite. All three families. And by the way, isn't it interesting? Ham is the only family that has no culpability in the cross. He just comes as a servant to carry the cross. After the cross, the day of Pentecost, Peter gives the very first gospel sermon. The very first proclamation of the tents of Shem is given to Peter. And God made sure all three families were there at the day of Pentecost. Acts chapter 2 gives us a list of all the people who were there for the first presentation of the gospel. Acts 2:5. Now there were Jews, obviously, living in Jerusalem, devout men from every nation under heaven. He means all the Jews from around the world came there. Who were they descended from? Shem. And look at this long list in Acts 2, verse 9 and 10. I just highlighted some. Egypt, those are Hamites. Cyrene, northern Africa, that's Hamites. Rome, there's Japheth. All three of the families are there at Pentecost. And then as the gospel started to go out to the whole world, God made sure all three of the families heard the gospel. Acts chapter 2, 14. This is also Pentecost. Peter, taking a stand with the 11, raised his voice and declared, "Men of Judea, those of you who live in Jerusalem, let this be known to you. Give heed to my words. He's speaking to the Jews at Jerusalem, Acts 2:41. So then those who had received his word were baptized, and that day there were added 3,000 souls. The first 3,000 people in the church were from Shem. They were Jews. But then after that, in Acts chapter 8, verse 26, an angel of the Lord spoke to Philip. This is not the apostle, this is the deacon, saying, "Get up and go south to the road that descends from Jerusalem to Gaza." So he got up and went, and there was, and look at this, an Ethiopian eunuch. There's a Hamite. So the gospel went to the Jews, then to the Hamites. Peter now starts to minister locally, and we come to Acts chapter 10, verse 1. Now there was a man at Caesarea named Cornelius, a centurion of what was called the Italian cohort. There's Japheth. You see, God makes certain all three families heard that gospel. Speaking of gospels, what about the gospels themselves? Think about the gospels. The book of Matthew was written to the Jews to persuade them that he was their long-awaited Messiah. So the book of Matthew was written to Shem. Mark was written primarily for the servants throughout the Roman Empire, who were predominantly Hamites. And Luke was written to the cultured, intellectual European. Luke was written to the Japhethites. They went their separate ways. God never forgot them. Shem had not been a major factor in world history for one reason. Luke 21:24, Jesus said, "Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled." We're living in the times of the Gentiles. That's why Japheth has enlarged pretty much upon the earth. And let's face it, Japheth has predominantly driven world history the past few thousand years. That's because it's the times of the Gentiles. But it's the Japhethites, empowered by the design technology that Ham has brought. It's interesting, Jerusalem will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles are fulfilled. We're in the times of the Gentiles now. And the fact that you look at a photograph of Jerusalem and the Dome of the Rock appears right there on the Temple Mount, a Hamitic religion, means it's the time of the Gentiles. But during the Great Tribulation, Israel will turn en masse to Christ. And at that point, the times of the Gentiles will be over, and God will again turn to Shem. And during the millennium, everything will work together exactly the way God intended with the three families. In Isaiah, we have all kinds of passages about the millennium, about the kingdom. Isaiah 19:25, "Blessed is Egypt, my people." He's describing them in the kingdom. Who is Egypt? They're Hamites. "And Israel, my inheritance." They're Shem. And remember, to Shem was granted the knowledge of Yahweh, the tents of Shem. That will be functioning back in the kingdom. Isaiah 60, verse 3, "Nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your rising." The tents of Shem will be the center of the earth. It includes the whole world. Isaiah 60, verse 9, "Surely the coastlands will wait for me." Who are the coastlands? To those people, that was the islands that moved far away after the flood. So basically, it's us. The ships of Tarshish will come. Spain. Isaiah 66:19. Here's a summary of kingdoms in the millennium. Tarshish, there's Spain. Meshech, there's Russia. Tubal, there's Russia. Javan, there's Europe. In the millennium, everything works together. Somebody needs to write a book describing human history as the interaction between Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Let me close with one more little interesting point. God accommodated these three families with gifts to match who we are. You see, we all have a spirit, we all have a soul, and we all have a body. God gifted Shem to take care of our spiritual needs. He gifted Japheth to take care of the needs of our soul, our intellect, our mind. And he gifted Ham to take care of our physical needs. Next week, here's where I want to go. I want to show how it is. How did it work out that Ham went everywhere first? If Japheth was to be enlarged, why is it that everywhere you go, every part in the world, and I assure you, you won't think of a place in the world that Ham was not there first? Next week we'll see how that happened. And we'll look specifically at the story of the Tower of Babel. And if you want to be thinking about the story of the Tower of Babel, which is Genesis chapter 11. Think about this. Think about what happened at the Tower of Babel in relationship to how God intended it to work. God intended Ham goes first. He sets up the initial design technology. He designs a way of life. Immediately Japheth comes with the government, but Japheth comes armed with the tents of Shem. And see how it really played out.
We talked earlier that Japheth brought the gospel, and that is the church age. In Luke 21, Jews will be trampled underfoot by the Gentiles. Sounds like he was trying to destroy the tents of Shem. It sounds very destructive here.
In 70 AD, Rome destroyed Jerusalem. And since that time, the Gentiles have been on the Temple Mount. And Gentiles are everybody that's not a Jew. So to a Jew, a Gentile is this anybody who's from Ham or from Japheth. That's exactly what happened. Rome destroyed it, that's Japheth, and now Ham has the Dome of the Rock right on Temple Mount. And as long as we see that picture, that Dome of the Rock, and isn't it amazing? Every picture I see of Jerusalem, that's all I see. The most prominent feature of Jerusalem is the Dome of the Rock right there. That's just screaming, it's the times of the Gentiles. But it won't last.
What about the Catholic, how they have gone over the earth and got converts? I've often wondered how they converted a person to believe the way they do.
What happens is that, again, Japheth, if he is not accompanied by the tents of Shem, the gospel, he's going to produce a religion that's humanistic, it's self-effort, it's ritualistic. That's exactly what Japheth does when he's not living in the tents of Shem. Father, again, we thank you for your word. We thank you that although your word is not a word of history, it's a book of redemptive history. We thank you that there is powerful lessons from history envisioned in your word and also based on what we see in history. We thank you that you have gifted us. We thank you above all that you have gifted us with your Son, Jesus Christ, that he lives in the tents of Shem, that we are now saved not by what we do, but by his sacrificial substitutionary death for our sake on the cross. We thank you in Jesus' name this morning. Amen.